Yeah, very good morning to you. It is the papers for Thursday, the 7th of March. Yeah, it is March 2024. A very good morning to you. It's me, Richie Allen, and thank you for listening to this podcast. Now, today's front pages are understandably dominated by the spring budget, which was delivered by the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Jeremy Hunt, yesterday lunchtime. So let's quickly run through the front pages then. There are still enough, there are some interesting stories, non-budget stories, inside the papers. I've dug them out. We'll get to them in a moment. The Metro, cut and run, is the headline. A number of the papers are taking the point of view, they're putting forward the point of view that this was a desperate effort by the Conservative Party to woo voters ahead of the forthcoming general election, which many believe will be in May, possibly May 2nd. So, cut and run is the headline. The 2p cut to national insurance dominates the front pages. The Metro says the change in national insurance payments will lower contributions for 27 million workers, allowing someone earning £35,000 a year to keep an extra £450 per annum. The Metro says Hunt has drawn battle lines for the election. The Daily Telegraph, Hunt signals the end of national insurance. The Telegraph is claiming that Hunt wants to go further by abolishing national insurance altogether and could make the policy the centrepiece of the Conservatives' manifesto in the run-up to the election. It quotes Hunt, does the Telegraph, telling a dinner on Wednesday night, he attended a dinner last evening, that all else equal, lower taxes are better for growth. The front of the Times, we're turning the corner, is the headline. The Financial Times, Hunt leaves the door open to more tax cuts. The Daily Mail, will it be enough to see off Labour, is the headline. Will it be enough to see off Labour? And the Daily Mail's front page contains three or four takeaways from the budget. £1,300 child benefit boost for 500,000 middle class families. But some Tories ask, where was the game changing big rabbit from Hunt's hat? That's the Mail. The Daily Express, Britain ready for take off. The Express predicts Hunt's decision to put more cash in people's pockets will turbocharge the economy. The Express is a Conservative Party supporting newspaper. Unsurprisingly, the Daily Mirror headline is We Deserve Better. Stagnant budget for a stagnant country by a stagnant government. After 14 years in power, is that the best you can do? Asks the Mirror. The Guardian calls it a last desperate act. That's the headline. A last desperate act. The Guardian also features on its front page, it's Trump v. Biden after Haley drops out of presidential race. Nikki Haley announced last evening that she was suspending her campaign to be the Republican nominee for this year's presidential election. The I leads with front page headline is Labour rules out taxing wealthy to avoid £20 billion cuts. What's that about? Well, Labour is saying it won't tax high earners in order to plug a £20 billion black hole in Britain's public spending. Labour is signalling to the wealthiest people in the country, don't panic, if we win the election, we're not coming after you. The I paper says Rachel Reeve, the Shadow Chancellor, and Starmer are determined to resist any left-wing pressure for taxes on wealth, such as a mansion tax. The Sun. Harry's pants sell for $250,000. The hell is that about? Well, a pair of boxer shorts worn by Harry, Prince Harry, at a Las Vegas party years ago have sold for $250,000. The paper, The Sun, says the shorts were sold by ex-dominatrix Carrie Royale and bought by a San Diego strip club boss whose name is Dino Palmiotto. The story alleges Dino Palmiotto has built a kind of a shrine to Prince Harry somewhere, and he's paid $250,000 for his boxer shorts. Jesus, Mary and Joseph. And the Daily Star headline is "Fry-ups turn blokes into stud muffins as if it was ever in doubt." Men who eat fatty foods like a full English breakfast have been found to be more attractive to women, as if it was ever in doubt, according to the Daily Star. This is the papers. Incidentally, as I recorded, it's now 6:20 in the AM. I sound a bit rough because, as you know, I've been battling a bit of a throat, streptococcal or something. I don't know what they call it. Bit of a throat infection for the last couple of weeks. I can't seem to shift it. I wish I hadn't had all of those COVID jabs. I should have stopped after three. I didn't have any COVID jabs. Maybe I did, maybe I didn't. No, we didn't have any COVID jabs. No, I say that because there are those, there are learned men and women, we've met some of them on the Richie Allen show. Didn't they say that one of the big problems for people who did have mRNA jabs, that in the future they would find it more and more difficult to shake off infections, and that infections would become far more serious than they otherwise would be because, the vaccines, the mRNA jabs, which are not really vaccines, they would eventually lead to the body's own organs or the body's immune system attacking its own organs. But listen, just for clarity, of course, I did not have a COVID jab. I haven't had a jab of any kind in decades. I've never had a flu jab. Never. Not a single time. Thank God for that. So that's the front pages then. Pretty much full to the brim of budget stuff. So let's have a look inside because there are some non-budget stories which I found interesting. Here's one in the Times. School checks bins at pupils' homes to sniff out truants. This is kind of disgusting, as much as it is creepy. A secondary school has been accused of invasive snooping tactics after its head teacher said staff were checking pupils' homes to determine if they were playing truant. Staff at the Astrea Academy Woodfields in Doncaster, South Yorkshire, went to the homes of pupils who were absent for lengthy periods. They checked if bins hadn't been put out or if posts had piled up, suggesting the pupils were on holiday rather than off sick. David Scales, the academy's head teacher, said the checks were conducted out of concern, since the pandemic absences in class have reached record levels. Government data suggests more than 117,000 ghost children have been missing from class at any stage in the past academic year. This is an increase of more than 20,000, or about 23% from the previous year. Scales said in a video posted on Twitter that parents had claimed their child was sick, but visits to the home showed that the bins are no longer moving around. He added, "We are putting this down as an unauthorised holiday and we are issuing a fine." The head teacher, wow. The head said some parents would scam the school, even impersonating a doctor's surgery by changing the caller ID on their phone when calling the school. "It isn't the doctor calling. We know it's a scam. It's an unauthorised absence. Therefore, we issue a fine." What a little tyrant. What a little Nazi this fucker is. I have a real problem with this, even though I don't have children attending school. I wouldn't allow a child attend a school. I've said this too many times to repeat it here. But if a parent decides they want to keep a child home for any reason, that should be good enough for any school or for any local authority. It's disgusting and creepy, isn't it? Imagine sending people around to the house to look at the bins and to check the post. The fucking cheek of them. I'll just leave that one hanging. Might get into that on a phone-in on the Richie Allen Show and other issues around it. All right, that's the Times. The Telegraph. Do you remember that famous photograph of the sailor in Times Square in New York kissing the nurse on VJ Day? Remember that one? It's been seen. Everybody has seen it at some stage. It's in every history book. Excuse me. I've seen it in people's homes. I've gone to visit people and I've seen a rendering of it. Excuse me again, you'll have to bear with me. Anyway, so the headline in the Telegraph is famous non-consensual VJ Day kiss spared US government ban. Now, the kisses of George Mendoza, and the nurse he kissed on VJ Day was Greta Friedman. So, a historic photograph of an American sailor kissing a woman in Times Square narrowly escaped a ban by the US government's Veterans Affairs Department for breaching its sexual harassment policy. My God. Alfred Eisenstadt's photograph, which has become one of the most famous images of the 20th century, shows sailor George Mendoza kissing Greta Friedman as New York City celebrated the end of the Second World War on Victory Over Japan Day. But the US Veterans Secretary was forced to intervene on Tuesday after a more junior official attempted to ban it from the building. Rima Ann Nelson, the department's Assistant Secretary for Health for Operations, said in a leaked memo on Tuesday that the image would no longer be displayed in an attempt to provide a safe, respectful and trauma-informed environment. What the fuck is a trauma-informed environment? She said the image depicts a non-consensual act which is inconsistent with the VA's no-tolerance policy towards sexual harassment and assault. There was a big backlash online over this leaked memo, and that forced the intervention of Dennis McDonough, the Veterans Secretary, who said he hadn't been consulted on the plans. "Let me be clear," said McDonough, the Veterans Secretary. "This image isn't banned. It is not banned from VA facilities, and we will keep it in VA facilities." Over the years, Mendoza and Ms. Friedman have spoken about it. They both acknowledge it wasn't consensual, but it was an expression of joy at the end of the war. You see, Ms. Friedman never claimed that she was a victim. Back in 2005, she said it wasn't a romantic thing. It was kind of, thank God the war is over, kind of a thing, she said. "It wasn't my choice to be kissed. He grabbed me, gave me a big kiss, and that was the end of that. No big deal." Mendoza died in 2019, and he said, "I'd had a few beers." Of course. "I just returned from the war in the Pacific. I saw the nurse. I was overjoyed. I grabbed her and I gave her a kiss." There you are. So the VA is not going to be banning this amazing photograph. Wonderful. Wonderful. Rima Ann Nelson, huh? "We need to provide a safe, respectful and trauma-informed environment. Rima Ann, here's your P45. Close the fucking door behind you." I would say, but then I wouldn't. I don't believe in firing people. Here's the Mirror. So we will do a budget story. This concerns me. It really does. I was in a pub recently in Manchester with the future missus. And I went up to the counter and I said, "What's selling today?" The guy said to me, "This IPA is a nice drop." So I said, "Give me a pint of that then." The future Mrs. Allen is teetotal. El Frogo, right? So I, "What do you want, love?" "I'll have a ginger ale with one lump of ice in the glass," she said. Lovely. He gave me the pint and he gave me the ginger ale and he asked me for $8.75. Fuck me. That is expensive. So I said to him, "Jesus, man." He said, "I know." And he started to outline the problems that he had running his bar. The costs from top to bottom. And I said to him, "I can't believe you're still in business." And he said, "I won't be in business for very long." Here's a headline in the Mirror. Fuming campaigners demand Jeremy Hunt is banned from every pub in the country. Wow. Campaigners say Hunt's woeful budget should have him barred from pubs nationwide. The grassroots campaign for pubs called Wednesday's announcements an absolutely dreadful budget for UK pubs. A spokesman added, "Hunt should not be welcome in any pub in the country. The landlady of one formerly thriving village pub said the budget had ended any hope of it staying open. Danny Bowyer, 30, who runs the King and Queen in Longcott, Oxfordshire, says the pub will close on March 23rd. And by the way, before I read more of this in the Mirror, these landladies and landlords, they're not exaggerating. This isn't poor me. They are closing because of what this government is doing to pubs. She blasted Hunt's decisions, saying a freeze on beer duty alone was not nearly enough to save her beloved pub, and with it, 18 jobs. Danny said, "You couldn't make it up. It's all spin. It's all bullshit." She pointed out that the headline duty on beer only affected one element of the price of a pint. And with no cut to the duty or VAT, as many in the industry had hoped, and with wages and energy costs jumping, the pub was no longer viable, she said. Had Hunt announced more help, she said, they might have found a way to carry on. But Danny, who will also lose her home when the pub closes, said, "Instead, we have people crying because we are having to close." And here's the thing, dear listener. There is no queue to pick up the keys from Danny. There are no landlords and landladies waiting in the wings to take over the village pub because the businesses are not viable. The Mirror goes on. Tom McNeeney of the Oxford Pub in Rochdale, Greater Manchester. I know it well. I don't know Tom McNeeney, but I know the pub. Shared her disappointment. He said a big part of the industry assumed the Chancellor would listen. Now that he hasn't, I think there will be a huge increase in those who will throw in the towel. Tom said many brewers had increased prices before the budget. More rises are expected this year, meaning pub prices were bound to keep going up. Nick Antona, or Antona, the chairman of the Campaign for Real Ale, said this budget was a missed opportunity to show backing for the Great British Pub by significantly cutting tax on draft beer and cider. It's a disaster for pubs. The scamdemic and the lockdowns closed thousands, probably 10,000 pubs in the UK. You drive around any town or village and you will see one, usually more than one, boarded up pub. Like I said, there isn't a queue of people waiting to take over. The pubs haven't closed because the landlords and landladies are idiots and because they weren't capable of running the pubs. The pubs have closed because of factors beyond, you know, out of the control of those landladies and landlords. And do I have to do my little spiel again about the importance of pubs to towns and villages? No, I don't. This is fucking satanic, what is happening. It is satanic. It really is. It's horrible. Let's leave it there. Are you planning on going to Spain this summer, are you? Or the Costa del Sol? Well, listen up. It may very well be the case that you don't have a swimming pool. Now, it may very well be the case that there might not be any water in the swimming pool. I jest you not. Several hundred thousand UK tourists go to the Costa del Sol every year. But the Costa del Sol is being affected by an acute water crisis sparked by a long-lasting drought. Crisis in Spain, as UK tourists planning summer holidays issued Costa del Sol warning. The Junta de Andalucía, which leads the southernmost region of Spain, has approved a fourth drought decree, and it did so at the end of January, focusing on reclaimed water to guarantee supply to the production sectors. The Junta allocated £185 million to projects aimed at recovering water and asked residents in the region to reduce water consumption as much as possible. And one of the things they are mooting, and they've quoted Manuel Jimenez, president of the Malaga Association of Property Administrators, is measures around the cleaning and filling and refilling of swimming pools run by apartment complexes and private residences. So they're proposing around Marbella and Mijas to bar residents from filling or refilling of private swimming pools and public showers and pumps. Now, if you go and stay in a hotel, that probably won't affect you. But if you rent an apartment that is in an apartment complex, right, It might very well affect you, and there might not be any water in your swimming pool. That's in the Express. Is it in the Express? It is in the Express today. If you're looking at going to Spain this summer, check ahead where you're booking if there will be any water in the pool, or if the pool will be refilled after cleaning. Yeah, I couldn't live without a pool. When I lived in Spain, everywhere we lived in Spain, in the 8.5 to 9 years we lived there, we had a swimming pool. Couldn't imagine life without it when we lived there. Anyway, the Mail, here's another story you might find interesting. Children are writing woke stories as themes like gender fluidity and Gaza appear in their creative writing report finds. Princesses, dragons and knights in shining armour usually take centre stage in stories written by children. But, this is in the Daily Mail, today's youngsters are increasingly turning to woke themes such as gender fluidity and Gaza in their creative writing. Analysis of 44,000 stories written by under-12s found a surge in tales about fashionable left-wing issues in comparison to 3 years ago. These included transgenderism, including using a person's preferred pronouns, the Israel-Palestine conflict, and climate change activism. Researchers from Oxford University Press said the children's writing reflects the world around them and shows the evolving linguistic landscape of young minds. The study looked at the stories submitted by children aged 5 to 11 to the BBC's 500 Words competition, which was launched more than a decade ago and supported by the late Queen. The report noted a number of stories this year either address themes of gender or include references to gender identity in an incidental way. One story written by a 9-year-old read, "Olivia knew they identified as non-binary and wanted to be called Liv." Another by an 11-year-old read, "Tafari, Jesus, was getting bullied a lot because of being transgender." And a third story written by a 10-year-old included the phrase, "Ladies, gentlemen and civilians of all gender identifications." Other children referenced the trend for transgender people to ask for preferred pronouns to be used. One wrote, "I'm Crystal, 10 years old, pronouns are she/them. Maya Forstatter, the executive director of campaign group Sex Matters, said the trend appearing in these stories is disturbing and reflects the fact that the pathology of gender dysphoria is being promoted to children as a way to be special or as an adventure. It is a safeguarding risk for children to be taught adult concepts. Presenting these themes as suitable for children is deeply concerning. The report shows the extent of gender ideology indoctrination in primary schools across the UK. And that story is in today's Daily Mail. There isn't a lot else, really. As I said, the papers today are filled to the brim with budget stuff. I'm having a quick look at the BBC News website today. And again, not a lot outside of budget. Trump challenges Biden to TV debates anytime is a BBC News website story today. Trump said he would take part in a TV forum with the Democratic president anytime, anywhere, any place. Biden's campaign in response said Trump was thirsty for attention and struggling to expand his appeal. No debates have been agreed yet ahead of the election in November, according to the BBC. Both of these guys are impaired, no doubt about it. It would appear that Biden is far more seriously impaired than Trump. Again, I just can't see these guys, both of them, making it to November, but I could be wrong. What else is there? We know what's coming. Eastern Ukraine braces for Russian advance is a headline about the conflict in Ukraine. 3 killed in Houthi attack on ship, according to the US military. We'll leave that one alone. So I'll tell you what, that's about it for today's edition of the papers. Do join Your BBG at 4 o'clock UK time today for Thursday's Richie Allen Show. I look forward to your company this Thursday at 4 o'clock. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your Thursday. Have a good day. I will go for a big long run now after a long stretch. And then it's off back to work for me. So until 4 o'clock from Your BBG, it's bye for now. Bye.